Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
He would like to see us possibly have a special session later this year.
It's looking like lawmakers in Juneau will need more time for some major legislative priorities. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, May 3rd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Alaskans spoke in favor of ranked choice voting during a hearing on a bill to repeal the measure.
Peltola and Murkowski were recently elected moderates who can reach across the aisle.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by SNAP.
The Alaska legislature appears to be marching toward another special session to come up with a fiscal plan to balance the state's budget in the face of declining oil revenue. In a news conference Tuesday, Senate President Gary Stevens said in recent meetings, the governor indicated he would call a special session.
We've had some fruitful discussions with him. He would like to see us possibly have a special session later this year.
The legislature and governor agree the state needs a plan to implement new taxes, change the permanent fund dividend formula, and increase the amount public schools receive per student. But with 2 weeks remaining this session, it's likely they'll need more time. The Senate passed a bill earlier this week that would reduce the size of PFD payments, part of its attempt to resolve one piece of the fiscal plan. But the bill faces stiff opposition from the House, which has insisted on higher PFDs. House members have introduced both a sales tax and an income tax bill, but have yet to vote on either plan. Stevens said he's still waiting to see the tax proposal the governor promised.
What we're looking for from the governor is some leadership, so we know where what bills he may have. We've been hearing about a sales tax bill that hasn't materialized yet for the last 3 weeks. We're anxious to see that.
Governor Mike Dunleavy said last week that he would introduce a sales tax proposal. On Tuesday, his office did not answer questions about when that would be. According to the Alaska Constitution, the governor can call a special session up to 30 days after the regular session ends on May 17th. A bill that would repeal ranked choice voting in Alaska drew a lot of public opposition at a hearing in the House State Affairs Committee yesterday. But its passage in the final days of the legislative session seems unlikely. And as Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, it's not the only repeal effort underway.
The sponsor of the repeal bill, Republican Representative Sarah Vance of Homer, says getting rid of ranked choice voting was the number one issue her constituents wanted to discuss last year.
For many years, voters have highlighted the lack of trust in our election process. Ranked choice voting has exacerbated that because it must be counted by the use of a computer using an algorithm instead of people being able to simply count and tally a vote.
Alaska voters adopted the new voting style by ballot measure in 2020. Candidates no longer compete in a partisan primary to get on the ballot. Instead, all candidates appear on the same primary ballot and the top four advance to the general, where voters have an opportunity to vote for their favorite and rank the others according to their preference. Vance presented the results of a Dittman poll showing 51% of Alaskans want to repeal ranked choice. But among nearly 50 members of the public who spoke at the hearing, the testimony ran 3-1 in support of ranked choice voting.
I think RCV is working.
Rob Welton of Douglas says he likes ranked choice and likes the results, particularly in last year's congressional election.
You look at where Peltola and Murkowski were recently elected moderates who can reach across the aisle, and they're already decreasing the national temperature at the Congress level, which is good.
Wilton says he can easily sum up his argument in favor of ranked choice.
Two words, Kathy Geisel. She's doing a great job in the Senate.
Geisel is a Republican senator from Anchorage. In 2020, she lost her Republican primary. 2 years later, with the partisan primary gone, she easily won the seat back. She's a fan of ranked choice voting, and she's now the Senate Majority Leader. That's one reason the repeal bill stands a slim chance of becoming law. Opponents of the new system often cite voter confusion, including Jan Morrison, who testified from Soldotna.
I'm having people tell me that they will never vote again if it's, quote unquote, the funny voting.
House State Affairs Chairman Laddie Shaw, an Anchorage Republican, has scheduled another public hearing on the bill next week. Outside of the Capitol, leading opponents of ranked choice voting are putting their energy into a voter initiative. Art Mathias, a sponsor of that campaign, says they have more than half of the signatures they need to get on the ballot. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Investigators are working at the site where two 11th Airborne Division Apache helicopters collided and crashed in the interior April 27th, killing three soldiers and injuring a fourth. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
11th Airborne Division Media Relations Chief John Pinnell says an investigation team from the Army's Combat Readiness Center out of Fort Novosel, Alabama, began work at the crash site about 50 miles east of Healy Monday. Pinnell says onboard flight recorders have been recovered from the wreckage.
Each helicopter had a black box that, much like with commercial airliners, it records a loop of continuous information during the flight. And so they were able to recover the black boxes from both helicopters, and they've got those back at Fort Wayne right now.
An 11th Airborne Division release says the 30-minute recording loop captures aircraft altitude, attitude, airspeed, and heading, among other information. Pinnell says additional investigation is occurring at the crash site.
Taking measurements and looking at the debris from the crashed aircraft, and trying to piece together what they think might have happened.
Pinnell says the wreckage will eventually be transported out of the remote location by helicopter.
Bring the aircraft wreckage back to Fort Wainwright for further study, but they need to make sure that they've got everything that they need from the crash site first before they start moving the pieces.
Pinnell says he cannot share anything else about the investigation.
The investigation will take as long as the investigation takes. And once it's completed, then the team from the Army Safety Center will brief the command as to what they found.
The Army does not release any information to the public concerning mishap causes, analysis, or internal recommendations. Redacted copies of crash investigation reports can be requested. Pinnell says the April 27th crash occurred as the two helicopters were returning from training to Fort Wainwright from an aerial gunnery range in the Donnelly training area southeast of Fairbanks. He says they were flying at 6,000 feet mean sea level, and there were no known weather or visibility issues.
I can't tell you whether it was clear blue skies or cloudy or anything like that, but there were no particular weather warnings for that area at the time.
The U.S. Army grounded non-critical flying Friday in response to the Alaska helicopter crash and a previous one in Kentucky that killed nine. All active units are required to complete additional training during the pause, which is scheduled to end May 5th. In Alaska, Pinnell says the 11th Airborne is only flying as much as it has to.
To finish the investigation into the crash.
A private memorial service for the three soldiers killed in the crash, Christopher Robert Aramo, Stuart Dwayne Waymont, and Kyle D. McKenna, is happening Thursday afternoon at Fort Wainwright. Pinnell says the division has been shaken by the crash and loss.
We're just trying to step forward and do everything we can to support those folks that have been left behind and figure out why, and then going forward, try to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Pinnell says the soldier who was injured in the crash is out of the hospital and recovering at home. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the controversial Drag Queen Story Hour will not return to the Ketchikan Library.
I think when we're talking about diversity and inclusivity, there are always going to be people who feel polarized by that.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
A Metlakatla woman is in custody on murder charges after police say she killed her 3-year-old son and her adult brother by driving into them after an alcohol-fueled party. 27-year-old Alicia Henderson is charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter. She was arrested yesterday. The charges stem from an April 22nd party where local police say Henderson was drinking with several others. Her young son, the boy's father, and other adult relatives were also there. According to the charges, it was around 1:30 a.m. when the boy, his father, and Henderson's brother were walking home from the party when Henderson drove a white Nissan Pathfinder SUV into the three of them. Police say surveillance video from a nearby school shows the Pathfinder turning its lights off and accelerating. Henderson's brother, 24-year-old James Henderson, was taken to a local clinic and pronounced dead. The boy died the following evening after he was medevaced to Anchorage. The boy's father was also wounded but survived. Henderson initially denied being behind the wheel but later admitted to thinking that she had hit a car instead, according to a recorded phone call monitored by Alaska State Troopers. Henderson was convicted of DUI in March of last year. Her bail in the current case is set at $250,000. The board that governs school sports in Alaska has decided against adopting a change to its bylaws that would have prevented transgender girls from participating in girls' sports. But as the Alaska Beacon reports, the Alaska School Activities Association said its board could still adopt the change in the future if State Department of Education and Early Development rules compel it to. The association said in a news release that it felt until the State Department changes its current regulations, it would be premature to change their own bylaws. The association released its statement Tuesday after 2 days of board meetings in Valdez. On Monday, members of the public testified on the proposed bylaw change, with most opposing it, saying that it was anti-trans. The bylaw change proposal was prompted by a vote of the Alaska Board of Education and Early Development, which has told the State Education Department to set new rules. These rules would create two divisions in sports, one for students who were identified as female at birth, and one for students of any gender. The Ketchikan Public Library will not host another Drag Queen Storytime as part of its Pride Month programming. That's according to Ketchikan City Manager, who recently reversed course and canceled the event, citing the public's response to last year's reading. KRBD's Eric Stone reports.
Ketchikan City Manager Delilah Walsh told the mayor and city council that Drag Queen Storytime would not return. In an interview, Walsh stood by her decision.
We will not program a Drag Queen Storytime.
The decision is the latest development in a long-running debate over LGBTQ programming at Ketchikan's library. Last June, the Ketchikan Public Library held its first ever Storytime with the Drag Queen to celebrate Pride Month and promote inclusivity. The Drag Queen Luna, portrayed by high school drama teacher Tommy Varela, read a picture book to dozens of children and guided them through a series of simple dance moves alongside a children's librarian.
This book is called The Hips of the Drag Queen Go Swish, Swish, Swish.
The event was wildly popular. Luna had to read the book three separate times to accommodate all the attendees. The library director said it was the biggest story time on record. But the run-up to the Drag Queen event was marked by controversy. The council ultimately voted 5-2 to allow the Drag Queen event to proceed. Fast forward to this April, when city officials were considering another Drag Queen story time, and the firestorm erupted anew. Walsh cited public pushback in her decision to cancel the reading. She pointed to two factors: disagreement about last year's event among city council members and a citizen-led effort to cut library funding that was in part spurred by Drag Queen Storytime.
Based on the reaction last year of the event, and I agree it is a well-attended event, it also had very negative feedback from community members. My focus is education in our community, and the event is not necessarily leaning toward that objective.
She offered a couple of alternatives. Walsh said any nonprofit group would be welcome to host its own reading with a drag queen. But leaders of Ketchikan's biggest LGBTQ-focused nonprofit say they have no plans to fill the gap left by the city's cancellation. The Pride Alliance said in a statement that it's concerned that stepping in to host the story time would strengthen the city's case for canceling the event. Frankie Urquhart teaches health at Ketchikan High School. She instructs nearly all freshman students. And she says she's concerned about the impact of the cancellation on students' mental health.
One part of, you know, your positive social and emotional health is love for yourself and feeling like you are a part of a community.
She says a drag story time would have been one of a few places where LGBTQ teens could see themselves represented in public life in Ketchikan. Urquhart says she worries that canceling the event sends the wrong message. Martin, the Pride Alliance president, said her group would be more than happy to explain to Walsh the importance of the event in more detail.
I think when we're talking about diversity and inclusivity, there are always going to be people who feel polarized by that.
Though Walsh told council members in her email that she had, quote, many discussions with community members on both sides of the issue, Martin says Walsh did not consult her group before deciding to cancel the event. One council member is vocally pushing back.
I'm not happy with it. I think that the council was very clear last year.
Janalee Gage is a progressive member of Ketchikan City Council. She says she's concerned about the precedent the decision sets.
Although I know that the manager has the right to decide what each department does, I think this sets a precedent that goes a lot deeper.
For her part, Walsh says she fully supports making Ketchikan a diverse and inclusive community where all feel welcome.
I'm from New Mexico, but I'm a Hispanic female. In my own experiences, I understand what it feels like to be different.
Walsh said in her email that there is no protocol for determining the appropriateness of city programming, saying she's ultimately responsible for making decisions in the best interest of the city. Asked about other city events or programming that might face cancellation for their polarizing or controversial nature, Walsh struggled to come up with an example.
It's really a difficult reach for me to come up with a comparative.
Walsh defended her decision to cancel the event, but she says she's expecting pushback from people who'd like to see the story time go forward.
I'm sure we're going to see the same exact responses as if we held it. We'll have a group of people who are opposed, a group of people who are against, and everybody absolutely has a right to their opinion. My goal is just to make sure that I'm making the right decisions operationally for the city.
The issue is likely to return to the city council soon. Gage, the city council member opposing the cancellation, says she plans to bring it up for discussion at a council meeting scheduled for Thursday, May 4th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Avoid surprises on the drive. Before getting on your way, check 511 for traffic delays. For current traffic information and road conditions, visit 511.alaska.gov or download the app or call 511. For more detailed information about DOT construction projects, visit dot.alaska.gov/construction. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
President Joe Biden's Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act dedicated billions of federal dollars to plan and build better water and waste systems in rural Alaska, a sum the state promised to match. Rural Alaska communities have some of the least developed water and sewage pipe systems in the country. The city of Bethel recently challenged the state in a letter claiming the state is not evaluating applicants consistently and that its funding decisions are skewed to benefit communities that already have pipes. KYUK's Sunny Bean reports.
Bethel's leaders are asking whether the state is making a good faith effort to financially support sustainable water and sewer services in rural Alaska, or if it's all just lip service. The state and federal government have promised billions in investment, but in a letter, Bethel City Attorney Libby Bacalar says those funds are buried in a bureaucratic maze.
So the funding for these water projects come from the EPA, and it goes to the state, and the state has to manage those funds.
That's Bethel City Manager Pete Williams.
And so the state comes up with how they're going to qualify somebody for the funding. And we're kind of saying that it's more of a stumbling block to obtain the funding than it is helpful to obtain it.
Unlike the vast majority of the U.S., many communities in rural Alaska have few or no piped water and sewage facilities. The main reason is because of cost. Bethel has some of the most expensive utility costs in the country. But, the city points out, the state's scoring system punishes communities that don't already have piped infrastructure. Communities without pipes scored on average 22 points lower than piped communities.
You know, I think there has to be a better way. I mean, you can't expect somebody out in Timbuktu to be exactly, you know, to do the exactly the same as somebody downtown Seattle. So, I mean, there has to be some give and take here.
This year, Bethel didn't qualify to apply for grant money from the Rural Utility Business Program because it didn't pass one of the two metrics by 1 point. That single point meant they couldn't apply for a $19 million grant. This score was surprising in part because, according to the letter, the city submitted nearly identical documentation last year and scored 28 points higher. The city contends this is a flaw with the scoring system.
What's required has been kind of sometimes it's said a moving target.
While Bethel submitted the high volume of information required, it was penalized because it hadn't included some of the information on the budget correctly. William said it bothers him because city staff weren't told this was an issue until months later, and all of its budget records are available online. He said a lot of other communities failed to make it through the system, too.
So, for instance, there's 110 communities that did meet this score. So that in the end, the money that was expected to be used, that the federal government gives you the money, they say, hey, we're going to build some piped water sewer projects. It doesn't trickle down to those that need it.
The letter also points out the metrics don't account for local factors, like the financial impact of subsistence living, the subsidies communities already benefit from, and the willingness of customers to pay. In any case, the cost of construction has been high, and these grants only pay for new projects, which Bethel has a hard time affording.
As these projects go out to bid and they come back, they're three times the estimate.
Managing water and sewage effectively isn't a problem that's going to go away. Piped infrastructure is the single most important tool to improve health outcomes in rural Alaska and to meet the Safe Drinking Water Act.
To stay healthy, it's been proven that it's very, very important. You know, I know out here when I first came here in the early 80s, there was an epidemic of hepatitis B, and that had a direct correlation with honey buckets.
The city's letter requests that the state change course and deliver on the infrastructure investment they've promised. They ask that Bethel be made eligible to apply for funding immediately and that the state remove eligibility metrics that gatekeep grants, which they contend perpetuate longstanding health disparities in Bethel and the surrounding region. Staff from the State Department of Environmental Conservation say they're working on a response to the letter. In Bethel, I'm Sunny Bean.
Annie Bartholomew's album Sisters of White Chapel started out as a songwriting project, then a musical, or a folk opera, as she calls it. In Juneau last summer, local actors and musicians took to stages wearing Victorian gowns and telling reimagined versions of real stories that real women lived over 100 years ago. Now, Bartholomew is releasing the songs as an album. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
That's Annie Bartholomew playing Mountain Dove Song in the KTOO studio. It's one of the tracks on her new album. Sisters of White Chapel is about the Klondike Gold Rush from the perspective of the sex workers who worked in the mining towns.
I wanted to share how difficult those times were and how little power these women had, but also what they made of it and how it is a survival story that you just don't hear. When you think of Jack London or Into the Wild, you know.
The idea for Sisters of White Chapel took root after Bartholomew toured the Red Onion Saloon in Skagway, a restaurant and museum that used to be a brothel. The tour was campy, but it stuck with her.
I was just a little bit haunted by the true stories that I heard and the artifacts that I saw.
It shifted her perspective on what sex work meant at the time.
Though I have not lived through anything as traumatic as that, I just had so much empathy for these gals and found that a lot of the narratives I'd been told about sex workers and prostitutes were wrong. It just busted a lot of stereotypes that I had because of media, and I really wanted to use music to examine them.
Bartholomew said that some historians in Southeast Alaska shy away from the brutal choices that these women faced, and that it's often whitewashed or ignored in tales of the gold rush.
But they are our history, and we're living with the consequences today.
They think they can buy my silence. They think, what can money buy? They tried to sell me back my virtue. I wouldn't lose a dollar thinking about the price.
I think anywhere you see resource extraction communities, you get all of these other social ills like man camps and missing and murdered Indigenous women.
She said she worked to balance the exploitation of sex workers with the fact that they had agency and their own wills.
Yeah, my mom said, it can't all have been bad times, Annie. And I think if you want to find the trauma and hurt and tragedy, it's everywhere. But they also had good times, and they also were entrepreneurs.
Each song on the album is original, except for one. The Cuckoo is rewritten from a traditional folk song. And one song found its inspiration in a miner's poem from 1900 that was published in the Daily Klondike Nugget.
One of the things they did to entertain themselves was write poems and publish them anonymously in the paper. All for the Klondike's Gold was a poem that I had read and kind of absorbed and then just ended up reworking for this song.
The song is a lament of a woman whose husband died on the Chilkoot Trail.
All for the Klondike's gold, my love, all for the Klondike's gold, all for the love of gold and gain, all for the Klondike's gold.
Bartholomew went back to the Red Onion to record a video of an early version of one of the songs. She said she finished writing the song on the ferry to Skagway.
It was very magical to finish the song on Lynn Canal with the wind in my hair and get to practice it as much as I could before having to, like, put on a skirt and corset and then go record it.
She recorded the album at a cabin in Juneau's Eagle River United Methodist Camp with all Alaska artists. Bluegrass musicians Aaron and Andrew Heist backed her up on various strings, Marion Call helped with vocals, and Kat Moore contributed to voice, piano, and bass.
My producer, Justin, came in from Gus Davis and drove up everything needed to turn that spot into a full-fledged recording outfit.
The album comes out June 16th. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
In 98, we were Yukon-bound. 30 miles, she ran aground. Dawson City, no work to be found. Only trouble and gold by the pound.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly, and this is Annie Bartholomew singing Whitechapel Woman. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Lex Trinan in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Angela Denny in Petersburg, Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Sunny Bean in Bethel, and Yvonne Crumry in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
I'll be your sweetheart if you give me a word. But ain't no me.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.